like they chip really easy and yeah, be too scared. So yeah, they're kind of hidden away safely and many pairs of socks around, like comforting the medal and keeping it safe and protected.
Yeah. Well, look, I mean, it was amazing to watch you, Bryony, and many, many congratulations again. Really lovely to speak to you as well.
Thank you so much. It's so nice to speak with you as well.
Thank you.
Bryony Page, gold medalist in the trampolining. Oh, we'll have a quick final thought from you in a second, Jules, on this before we release you to EuroLeagues. But let's get a goal or an update from Man City against Paris in the Women's Champions League. Charlie Slater?
Where it's full-time, and Manchester City are through to the Champions League group stage for the first time in 3 years. Couldn't have been more comfortable. 3-0 on the night. 2 goals for Bunny Shaw, 1 for Chloe Kelly. It made it 8-0 on aggregate. Ellie, plenty to smile about the Paris Olympics on the show tonight, but not in the football.
Oh, thank you so much, Charlie. Just a final thought. I kind of think, we talked an awful lot, didn't we, about you being Paris-born and bred, or other people being Paris-born and bred at the Olympic Games. And I kind of feel that people who lived in London during 2012 felt a little bit changed by the game.
Yeah.
In a good way. Do you think the Games changed Paris or Parisians?
Yeah, there's no doubt. In terms of what the city had to offer, I know it's maybe hard to believe because it's such a wonderful city from the outside, but from the inside, when you live in it, it's a slightly, I think, different feeling and sentiment. But yeah, I think they showed the best that they had to offer, and they shared that with the whole world. And this is the idea. Parisians have always been very secular in many respects. And now we've just opened up almost the gates of the city to you, Ellie, and to everybody that came to see and people who watched on television, and everything we had to offer, from the monuments to the food, to the sport, even to the weather, apart from the opening ceremony. So it was all brilliant. And I think that legacy will last forever. I don't know exactly what will change concretely, but certainly I think the legacy and in people's memories and mind, like we said at the start of the show, I think will be there forever.
Yeah. Well, I mean, it was Paris at its very best. And I absolutely loved it, and it was just such fun to share it with you. I kind of feel like we were just saying we should do this every week. Which
I agree.
Talk to some more Olympians and Paralympians.
Yeah, completely.
Nothing better. If you want to hear actually from more GB Olympians who competed in Paris, then Dina Asher-Smith will be in conversation with Nihal Arthanayake in Headliners on Sunday evening from 8 o'clock, and you'll be able to hear the full interview as a podcast after the programme. Just search for Headliners on BBC Sounds. Well, coming up next, Jules is going to be doing his day job, kind of, in EuroLeagues with Steve Crossman. But that's it from me. Before that, it's time for the BBC News with Laura Harms.
The voice of the UK.
And the home of the Premier League.
This is BBC Radio 5 Live.
The Met Police says it will look into whether anyone else should be pursued for criminal offences related to sexual abuse allegations against the former Harrods owner, Mohamed Al-Fayed. The force is also reviewing historical cases. It says that between 2005 and 2023, 19 women came to them about alleged crimes by Mr. Al-Fayed. Lorne McDonald is a former director of public prosecutions for England and Wales.
It produces a pattern that one would think that police and prosecutors would be very interested in indeed. I mean, it's not normal for a person to face this many allegations of such serious criminal offences from 19 separate women.
The Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu has instructed the country's military to continue fighting with what he's called full force against Hezbollah in Lebanon, despite growing international calls for an immediate ceasefire. Israel's foreign minister has said there'll be no ceasefire until victory over Hezbollah. Our correspondent Lina Sinjab is in Beirut.
Airstrikes are still happening in the south, but also here in the heart of Beirut. These kind of attacks are spreading waves of fear across Lebanon. People are running from the south to the north to Beirut, but even people are leaving Beirut to the mountains, and some are even thinking of leaving the whole country.
The Treasury is reconsidering the government's manifesto promise to crack down on people who are registered overseas for tax purposes. Labour had said targeting non-dom status would raise £1 billion, but the cash earmarked for extra hospital and dental appointments, as well as school breakfast clubs. The Conservatives' former co-chair, Baroness Varzi, has resigned the party's whip in the House of Lords. She's blamed what she calls the hypocrisy and double standards of how the Conservatives treat different communities. And Michael Mosley's wife has accepted a prize at the British Podcast Awards on his behalf after his death earlier this year in Greece. Dr. Claire Bailey Mosley said she wished more than anything he was at the awards and that life was short.
On Radio 4, the more you listen, the more you see.
We're living under more tyranny today than our founding fathers did in 1775.
A US presidential election is looming, but underneath, conspiracy culture rears its head once again. And nothing is as it seems.
All those things that we had feared our whole lives was coming true.
Burn the house down and start over. That seems to be the way.
It's America through the looking glass. Join me, Gabriel Gatehouse, as The Coming Storm continues. Listen on Radio 4 and BBC Sounds.
This is Five Live Sport.
The Euro Leagues with Steve Crossman.
Listen on BBC Sounds.
Good evening. Welcome back to Five Live Sports. So the EuroLeagues is on the way very shortly. First of all, let's check in on tonight's European football. Tottenham Hotspur facing Karabag in the Europa League. Sahail Sahi's watching.
It's been non-stop here, Steve. 27 minutes played. Tottenham 10-man, Tottenham 1. Karabag nil. Very quickly, Radu Dragosin sent off with a straight red after 7 minutes. 5 minutes later, Brendan Johnson, he opened the scoring after being put through by Dominic Solanke. It was a fine finish from the young Welshman. So Tottenham lead, Karabag, they've got 10 men, Tottenham 1, Karabag nil.
As we've already heard, Manchester City's women's team have booked their spot in the group phase of the Champions League. What about Arsenal? They're at home to Hacken. They lost the first leg 1-0. Chris Coles.
Arsenal close to joining Manchester City in the group stage of the Champions League, leading Hacken by 3-0 on the night. That is a 3-1 aggregate lead. Arsenal, very impressive. They've turned this around in style. Goals from Leah Valti, Mariona Caldente and Beth Mead. Arsenal in complete control and they are 15 minutes away from a place in the group stage of the Champions League. Arsenal 3, Hacken 1 on aggregate.
So Manchester City have done it. Arsenal look like they're about to do it and Celtic are going to join them as well, Gavin Wallace.
Certainly looks like it, Stephen. £420,000 in prize money. Celtic 2, Vorskla Poltava 0. It's 3-0 to Celtic on the night. The first goal came on 52 minutes. It was really quite nice, actually, the cross-in from Ashford Clifford towards Emma Lawton. She was first to head home, and then the second came on 63. Shannon McGregor was there to tap home from 6 yards as Murphy Agnew put a pinpoint cross into the box. And to be honest, with 3 minutes added time coming up on the board now, it's all been Celtic, Steve. So a good night for British women's football in the Champions League.
Very good indeed. Thank you very much, Gavin. So Johnny Iansen will be with you at 10 o'clock on Five Live to discuss the big news stories of the day. That will include 10:30 live speech from Keir Starmer, the Prime Minister at the United Nations in New York. 10:30 for that. Johnny on air from 10 o'clock. Between now and then, it is the EuroLeagues. I feel like I've not been able to say this in quite a long time. Good evening, Guillaume Balaguer.
What do you mean? Good evening.
Well, it's been a little while, hasn't it? I was on holiday for a while and then you were dodging my calls, but now we're back together.
Yes. A month and a half of holiday. That's what he's got. that's the consequences of. But now it's 24/7, isn't it? For another 10 months or 9.5 anyway.
Yeah, and we are going to talk about the possibility of players striking. I don't want to get into broadcaster strikes, Jules. You can't afford to. The amount you're on air, you know, I'm starting to worry about you a little bit.
I love it. It was so good as well to do the show earlier with Ellie and to talk about the Olympics and all the memories and have all those great GB athletes who competed, did so well, all have different stories. Some are younger, some are older, and they just have these incredible stories and I think legacy that they are building, which is wonderful. And that's what the Olympics is all about. So I love you boys, but that was also very special.
Forget it. It's finished, Jules. It's over. You're going to have to deal with
brutal.
The EuroLeagues, right?
I know.
Come on. Christoph Dereu is with us. Hey, Christoph.
Hey, Steve.
Oh, wow. You're right.
You're happy to be here?
Crikey.
Yes, very happy, yeah.
I wonder, Christoph, whether you've just read the quotes from Luis Enrique from a couple of hours ago. I don't know if you've seen this, but his pre-match press conference ahead of PSG against Rennes this weekend, he said, "I would take a 50% pay cut if it meant I didn't have to talk to the media." Which leads me to wonder what sort of pay cut you would take to be on with a different panel, judging by your energy in the introduction.
Well, it was just you. I'm not used to you anymore, to be fair.
Oh, it's
Steve,
just me.
No, it's not personal. It's just.
Listen, Christoph, if you've got a problem with me, I can offer you a 100% pay cut right now, my friend.
Okay, thank you.
Don't you worry about it. I can make that happen.
By the way, Steve, Rich coming from Luis Enrique, who, of course, is a follower of the EuroLeague, as you well know, and I may just finish my friendship with him right now, because he's just actually given hours, I think it was 18 months of his life, to Movistar for a documentary in which he talks about absolutely everything in front of a camera. So, yeah.
Maybe he got asked a really bad question. What's the worst question you've asked in a press conference, Jules?
It's a good question. I mean, I always ask great questions anyway.
Of course. Well, it goes without saying.
Yeah. But funny you say that, because the first question today in the press conference was, PSG have started really well this season, and the last two games they haven't played as well. And someone asked, can you tell us why the team hasn't played as well? And he never speaks French. It's still everything in Spanish. And at the end, he made a joke out of it, and then he went, c'est la vie, mon amour. So I just think, like, I wanted to use that to answer your question, Steve, by saying, c'est la vie, mon amour.
Do you know what? I wouldn't normally take part, because obviously you guys are all absolute doyens of European football. But the worst question I asked in a press conference was also in French. And it was when Alain Giresse was head coach of Senegal. He was Senegal head coach?
Yeah, that's right. That's right. Yeah, so amongst others. Yeah.
Africa Cup of Nations 2015. I'm there. And you know, Jules, that I speak a bit of French. Reasonable, okay French. I try. Yeah. Exactly. So if someone tries hard, you shouldn't like have a go at them if they haven't really nailed it. So I'm in a Giresse press conference, and I basically was just asking him whether or not he takes advice from the other members of what was called la carré magique.
Le carré magique.
Le carré magique. Yeah. You can see it's off to a flyer. Yeah. And I asked this long rambling question in French, right? So imagine that. I've just absolutely nailed this question in my eyes. And he sat back. And he coughed, and then he went, quoi? What?
Why did you make it long, the question, considering your French is bad?
I panicked, Jules. I absolutely panicked.
There is no bad questions. There is only bad answers. Well, that's what I've been saying all my life until I heard the question you asked. So there's no bad questions, apart from yours. Can I share one of mine?
Please do.
This was before the semi-finals against France, I think it was, in the Euros, to Luis de la Fuente. And I asked him what he felt like a very clever question at the time of thinking it. He says, you are devoted of God. So what is God? It was before the final. And what is God in football, in a final? But it was a terrible question. He made a really intelligent answer about what it means to have faith in God and how it doesn't change just because there is a final, and what you have to give God and what God gives you. It's a really good answer, much better than the question for sure.
So what you're saying is you actually ended up getting a really good answer from it, yeah? Which
yes.
makes me wonder, Jules, what is French for humble brag?
Exactly.
Yeah. 85058 at 5 Live Sport if you'd like to get in touch with us tonight. The full-time whistle's just gone at Celtic. Gavin Wallace.
It has indeed, and they will now be rubbing shoulders with the elite in women's football. Celtic 2, Volska Poltana 0, 3-0 to Celtic on aggregate, and Celtic making history in Scotland, the first Scottish women's team, Steve, to qualify for the group stages of the Women's Champions League. Lacklustre first half, both goals coming in the second. 52, it was Emma Lawton, she was first on the scene with a header after a great cross in from Ashford Clifford, and in the second came just around about 10 minutes later as Shannon McGregor was there to place home a great pinpoint cross from Murphy Agnew, who scored in the first leg. So Celtic were really dominant on the night, and they will be looking forward to the draw tomorrow. Celtic 2, Volska Poltana 0, 3-0 to Celtic on aggregate.
What a cracking story that is. Congratulations to Celtic and to Manchester City. They're back in the group stage of the Champions League after their victory over Paris FC tonight, and we will let you know what happens with the game between Arsenal and Häcken of Sweden. As we were just told, Arsenal 4-0 up at the minute. And it looks like in that second leg, cruising through to the group stage. Right, on the EuroLeagues then, over the course of the next 45 minutes, loads to get into. We're going to reflect on the career of Raphael Varane following his retirement yesterday. We'll hear from Vincent Kompany ahead of the biggest game of his Bayern Munich tenure so far. They've got the champions, Bayer Leverkusen, on Saturday. We'll also talk Madrid derby. And if we can squeeze it in, the resurgence of Tongi and Ndombele, which is a thing before Jules laughs. I'd say we'll end up talking about that at full time when Spurs like inexplicably fail to beat Karabag. That'll probably find that'll be the way it works. We want to start with this, though. Bit of a European spin on one of the big stories of the week. Rodri started a conversation about the possibility of players striking due to, in their eyes, having to play too much football last week. Then a few days later, he suffered that ligament injury, which by the looks of it is going to keep him out, sadly, for a long time. In between that, his words got a lot of support from the likes of Jules Koundé, Barcelona and France defender. So we're going to come on to the football side of this at some point and sort of look around Europe and talk about one or two players that City might look at if we're talking season-ending injury. But this suggestion, Christoph, about players going on strike with the football calendar getting busier and busier, kind of triggered by the expansion of the Club World Cup. How broad do you think support for the notion of striking is? And do you think what happened to Rodri against Arsenal, given his profile and how strongly he's spoken about it, might shift the dial?
Not sure, because some of those players, like I remember Kevin De Bruyne is already talking about it for 3 years, I think, that the schedules are too heavy for all the players. I think they should just sit down for a while, I think, those players. They haven't done that yet.
As in sit down together, do you mean?
Well, yeah, and it's a difficult one, because obviously, they should also look at the clubs, I think, because the Champions League was expanded thanks to the clubs. And yeah, we all know the story of the Super League. Then you have clubs doing those overseas tours at the beginning of the season. You have some clubs that are doing those tours after a season. So it's a really difficult one also, because yeah, the more games you play, the more money there is. So yeah, but anyway, there's too many games. We see it. We see it even in our job, going from game to game, watching games all the time. And we don't have to run for 90 minutes, to be fair. So luckily for some of us, I think. But yeah, I think at that point there will be maybe action. But yeah, they should talk with their clubs first, I think. I think if they have support of the clubs, then it might even get better.
There is a thing of players getting injured because of the amount of games there is. It's true that matches every 3 days, traveling across multiple time zones, media stress, sleeping problems, excessive minute of plays, and no need of recovery is the perfect storm. There's no doubt that this causes, tissue sensibilities and distorts the evaluation of your own capacity and ability. You put the leg a little bit too late and that could be really bad. Errors accumulate, that's no doubt. But it affects a very small bunch of players. It's just the elite players that play too many games. Behind the complaint, and it's not an organized campaign from players that all of a sudden thought, we want less games, let's all talk about it, and because they had a Zoom and they started working on it. No. But behind it, there is a wave of all the complaints from players and their trade unions. And now that it's at the forefront of media, the trade unions want to take advantage of it. All right, we heard some players, David Raya, Kevin De Bruyne, and those complaints about the amount of games, but there's more. And for me, now that the people are listening, the real battle deep down in football has to do with two things. The sharing of the massive cake that is football, that is not growing, and the bigger clubs and the bigger players are getting the biggest part. And I think trade unions want to share it around. And yes, the worry that more competitions organized by FIFA and UEFA will affect the quality of the product, maybe even kill it eventually. So these are, for me, the two big things. All of a sudden, a new Club World Cup and the new Champions League has a domino effect. No FA Cup replays. Cup Africa is moved in a different dates that affects players. And I'm starting to hear, maybe we shouldn't sign African players because they're going to miss 6 or 7 games in the middle of the season. So it has a domino effect. The national calendar has not moved for 20 years. It's UEFA and FIFA that are doing so, adding competitions that affect others. But it goes back to this idea that I think people in football are saying, are shouting from different angles, from different agendas, football, look at yourself, because we are risking, an effect that could just be very, very damaging. And there's something that gets mentioned by a lot of people. How could it be that the Premier League play 38 games and earn £4 billion and the NFL with 17 games earn £10 billion? Can the cake grow? Can we share the money better? And can just everybody get a bigger part of the cake? I think that's what's behind the complaints of the players.
Jules?
Do it then. Go and strike. It's just like, I understand everything that those players are saying. I think relate to it. Playing 70 games a season is not acceptable. So go on then. Because at the end of the day, your clubs, the ones who are going to the Club World Cup, by the way, the final of that Club World Cup on July 13th, if it goes ahead in the summer 2025, so the summer coming, is 3 weeks before the start of the Premier League. Which means that if Manchester City play Liverpool in that Club World Cup final, for example, this one or another one later, or whatever two clubs, then that means that you give those players, so Salah and De Bruyne, I mean, you don't even have to name them. Those players will have, what, 3 weeks off? It's not even possible because the season starts 3 weeks later. So it's just, why did the club accept to do that Club World Cup? Why did Man City and other clubs, top clubs, I'm not saying that Man City, I'm just saying in general, why they've accepted? And what about their own players? Did they say to their players, listen, we're going to agree to do this Club World Cup based from June 14th to July 13th, when there's no Euros or World Cups? And hang on, isn't that when we go on holidays usually for most of it? Yeah, it is. But so the players were not consulted by their clubs when the clubs agreed to do this club, the extended Club World Cup, like a mini World Cup for clubs, if you want. So go and strike, because your clubs will never learn and your clubs will never understand your complaints until you actually do something. Talking is not enough. I love Jules Koundé. I love Rodri. I love De Bruyne. I love all the boys that we've mentioned, but talking is not enough, because talking is not going to change anything.
But that affects what you're talking, what you're describing. Such a small percentage of football players, they've got no chance of getting the public opinion on their favour if they go on strike by saying, oh, we're playing too many games. That would be Rodri, yes. But I'm not sure the 16th, 17th player in Manchester City that plays maybe 15, 20 games a season has got the same complaint. You're talking about 0.01% of the players in the world. So it sounds like a rich people's complaint. That's what the trade unions, if you notice when they're talking in France, in Italy, in England, they're not just saying, yeah, let's go on a strike because of that. It's not enough. It's a good complaint for the media. It's a good complaint to hear from some of these players. These are the players that have got the platforms. But I understand that behind it, it has to be much more to actually go on strike. It's not enough reason. And then if you go deeper and you see that, yes, football is killing itself, it's filling the belly so big it's going to explode at some point, then people will understand it better. But just because they're playing more games, I don't think a bunch of them, 70, but really, really a small percentage, not enough reason to strike.
What there is, though, Christoph, is that there is a bit of a unification between players' unions and the global players' unions, which is FIFPro. So you've got FIFPro, and then you've got the likes of the PFA, which obviously England and Wales, players' union in France, players' union in Italy. They're all involved in a legal battle with FIFA at the moment, specifically around this topic, because it's around whether or not FIFA should be able to kind of unilaterally change the football calendar, which is what they've done with this expanded Club World Cup. So even though you might not at the moment have this big groundswell of players who are all saying the same thing, and as Guillaume says, there probably isn't that high a number of them, you do have a parallel thing running here, a legal battle, which in of itself could be very significant.
Yeah, and we will have to wait what happens with it, because never know what happens, but There are also the consequences that appeared like somewhere this week. I think that Bayern Munich, who also playing the Club World Cup, have 7 players out of contract. So if they reach the final of the Club World Cup, what would they do with them? Because their contracts end at the 30th of June. Then they have a final somewhere at the beginning of July. What happens with that? That are also things that haven't been thought through, I think, when they push through all those Club World Cup. So it looks like it's the decision that will still have those effects and complaints and legal battles. It's all to share the cake.
It's all about money. Do you think that the trade unions are going to court to actually stop competitions? No. They're actually saying, okay, you want this? Well, it affects, for instance, in France, it's so hard to actually sell the domestic rights of television because the Champions League is so attractive. Well, can maybe UEFA help the French Federation or the league either to actually not to lose that money, whatever it is? It's just a battle to share the cake. It really, we're not going to get those games.
I suspect they would dispute that, though, Guillaume, to be fair. You know, it's not. We don't have one of the heads of the players' unions on with us, and I think they would very much say that their concern is are there players? Do you know what I mean? They would disagree with you on that.
I have spoken to two.
Okay, fine, but do you know what I mean?
And that's what's coming.
In the context of this show right now, I just don't want us to represent people who aren't here to say what they think.
Fair enough. But what I'm getting at is it's something that has been happening now for a couple of years. Everybody's shaking the tree because they want really to get their share, and it's understandable. And there are obviously agendas that are opposite. And as I think it was Jules or Christoph said, sit down and yes, negotiate a better way to run the whole thing. But do you know what? The audience is growing. The audience is growing. So what I want to say to the new audience, sorry, there's going to be less games now because there's a bunch of players that don't want to play so much. No, it's just all this noise has to do. Just look at the agenda of the trade unions. Look at the agenda of the clubs, are very quiet. How UEFA are defending the fact that actually they distribute the money against, around federations, the same as FIFA. So they're doing good things for football. That's why they need more money, etc. And then eventually come out to a conclusion in which everybody's happier. This is what it is about. A lot of noise to come out with better football soon.
We'll come back to this in a second. Let's just wrap up some of the other football that's happening tonight. Arsenal are in the Champions League, Chris Coles?
They certainly are, Steve. Just the night they were hoping for. Convincing winners over Hecken. 4-0 in the end, 4-1 on aggregate. No sign of last season's stumble at this stage. Goals from Leovalti, Mariona Caldente, Beth Mead and Frieda Mahn, and Mead's the pick, expertly volleying into the corner. Hecken barely threatened and able to repeat their resilient display in Sweden. And Arsenal will be playing Champions League group stage football again after last year's absence. Arsenal 4, Hecken 0, 4-1 winners on aggregate.
Great night for the British teams. Arsenal, Manchester City and Celtic all through to the group stage of the Women's Champions League. Celtic, the first ever Scottish team to achieve that. In the men's football tonight in the Europa League, Spurs versus Karabag has reached half-time. Sahil Sahi.
Yeah, Tottenham 1, Karabag 0, a frantic first half. Tottenham went down to 10 men after 7 minutes. Radu Dragosin was caught out by the pace of Karabag's Brazilian forward Juninho, who would have been one-on-one with Vicario, the Tottenham goalkeeper. So Dragosin hauled him down and was promptly dismissed. 5 minutes later, Brennan Johnson bagged his third goal in 3 games for 10-man Tottenham, who lead at the break by a goal to nil.
And earlier tonight, it finished Malmö 0, Rangers 2, also in the Europa League. This is the EuroLeagues. We've got Guillaume Balaguer, Christophe Terreur, Julien Laurent, all with us. Here's another issue with this, Jules, with the idea of players striking, is that when we talk about striking, normally that's a relatively simple concept. You have an employee and you have an employer, and the employee is going on strike. This isn't the case when it comes to the situation with professional football, because you've got the players, you've got the clubs, you've got the broadcasters, you've got the governing bodies as well. Like when Rodri comes out and says we're playing too much football, when Jules Koundé comes out and says we're playing too much football, they're not speaking to their clubs necessarily there. But a lot of people listening to this might think, well, your club, your manager is the person who's picking you for these games.
Yeah, I mean, but I think the issue is, to go back to what I said earlier, is the clubs always want more money. And they see if somebody said to them, okay, you're going to go in the US and play X amount of games for £10 million, the clubs, Manchester City, Liverpool, Arsenal, Chelsea, all those clubs, Manchester United, they're going to say, yeah, no problem. We'll make that work. Don't worry. We'll make that work with the players. We'll find a way. Not really thinking about what Christophe just said about players out of contract halfway through that competition, for example. Not really thinking about players full stop. I really believe that too. So, clubs are also part of this issue of, because they always need more money and want more money, because all those clubs are losing money year after year after year, then you can't also blame them for trying to make more money somewhere else. But there's a point where we can't, so what, it's going to be like a 12-month season where they never really stop. What's the next level then? So I just think there's something that the players have to do. And I do believe that the unions are not strong enough anyway. They've never really been strong enough, from the PFA to FIFPro. And I think there's a case now to do, okay, maybe now we need to do something quite meaningful and quite important and quite brutal. And if that is like, I'm not playing this weekend, I don't feel like it, my body's already tired, and we're only like in game week 6 of the Premier League, something like that, even if it's individually, maybe, I don't know, something to make a change. Because right now, I can tell you, nothing is going to change, and somehow we're going to get to the summer and this Club World Cup will happen, and then after that we'll get another new season starting, and then more Champions League games, etc. And unless something really, really drastic happens, nothing is going to change.
Yeah, the one thing I would say, Jules, though, is that as far as those players' unions go, what they can do tangibly is slightly restricted. I mean, it's not like they've only just started talking about this. You know, the PFA have been talking about this for years, and I'm sure it's the same in other countries as well, and I'm sure it's the same with FIFPro as well. The players can come out and say, we'll consider striking. That is bound to get taken much more seriously than just the unions themselves questioning it, isn't it? I'm curious as to what you think they could do more.
No, I don't know. I just think they're quite absent. And yeah, it's a statement now and again. And I've got nothing against FIFPro or the PFA. And I'm French. I'm all for unions, and I'm all for striking, and I'm all for protesting. I just think that for that, you need a strong. It's not enough for a player individually in a press conference like Alisson or Rodri last week, or Jules Koundé the other day, sitting down there answering questions from the media.
Yeah, but they are taking FIFA to court. Like, that's quite a big deal.
Yeah, let's see where that goes.
Okay,
and let's see. But you see what I mean?
I was just going to say, there is a lot of work done behind the scenes, but it doesn't enter the media circle because it's not sexy enough. And the ones who've got the biggest platforms are the players. If there's a lot of conversations taking place between trade unions and captains of clubs, with the idea of them realizing that. It's a good time. They are now complaining. People are listening. It's a good time to put together situations like that have to do with the health of the players, like we're hearing from Rodri and Carvajal and De Bruyne, etc. But also with the fact, for instance, that players get, I think, is about 11% of the money that the England Federation gets. It goes back to the internationals, only 11%. So they are the stars of the show. They should perhaps get a bit more. And then the discussion could end up, as Ancelotti said, well, yeah, there will be a point where the players will play less and will accept reducing the wages. What? What? How many players do you know?
Ancelotti said that the other week, didn't he? Yeah.
How many players are they going to say, yeah, 20% less because I'm playing 20% less games? Yeah, right. They may say that publicly, but to their agent, they'll be like, I don't want to lose a single penny. They prefer not to play than actually
as they should, in fairness, Guillaume. You know, they've got contracts. That's the amount of money they've been promised.
Totally.
So, yeah.
And they should actually earn more money. Look at the 20 top sports stars in the world and how many are footballers. And you're talking about the most popular sport in the world. So they should actually get more money. So it's a complex situation that the populist view, the medias have taken it towards, oh, look, Rodri complains, he gets injured, players should play less. And it's much more than that. And it goes back, I insist on this idea, football has to look at itself and has to be run better.
Okay, let me finish with this to all three of you then. I mean, this never works that well on the radio, because if you ask, does anybody think this, and then there's silence, but I'm going to do it anyway. Do any one of the three of you think that this will result in the next 5 years, if things don't change, in a player's strike?
In a strike? No, but it will be resolved.
I didn't think so.
It will be resolved.
Okay, but that's, I understand what you're saying, but that's different. That's why I'm asking whether or not it could, because the other thing is that what you said is exactly right, Guillaume. There's only a very small number of players who play this number of games. And actually, Rodri could afford to go on strike. I don't know why I was about to pick on fullbacks there. A League Two fullback, a League Two defender, a League Two player, who's playing low, they can't afford to do that. And the unions obviously represent all the players. So you think it's unlikely?
That strike wouldn't have to do just with a reduction of games. It would have to do with global negotiations of contracts, with the amount of holidays that they get, and a lot of other things that, as it happens cyclically, it gets to a point where it's like, okay, clubs, you had most of the share of the money, you're running the show, FIFA and UEFA putting more games, we want to have our say. And there will be a bunch of complaints that will be put forward for a threat of a strike, which won't happen. But it will force people to sit down. I'm pretty sure of that.
Yeah, and it is ironic, Jules, that this comes at the same time that you're saying that you're doing too much radio. you need to do a bit less radio. You know, you're suffering from burnout.
I'm not coming for the show on Sunday. I'm not coming up.
Come in one of the yellow jackets. Do that. That's what you can do.
Les gilets jaunes.
That's the one. Yeah. I told you I didn't speak French well. 85058 at 5 Live Sport if you want to get in touch with us. That was absolutely fascinating. We're going to talk Rafael Varane now, announced his retirement this week at the age of 31. He won 4 Champions League titles, 3 La Liga titles, won the Copa del Rey, all with Real Madrid, of course, World Cup winner with France, won the League Cup and the FA Cup with Manchester United. I think, simply put, Jules, somebody who completed football, as they say.
Yes, pretty much. And I think even outside of all those trophies and titles that you mentioned, what made him special, and for me, was one of the greatest defenders of his generation, and certainly one of the greatest defenders we've ever had in French football history, was the way he was playing the game, his elegance, his intelligence, his sportsmanship. That we say sportsmanship. Yep. The way he saw the game, or he still sees the game now, I think just make him stand apart almost, made him stand apart. And that's why I love him so much, and I'm obviously completely biased, but you won't find someone in football that has a bad word to say about Rafael Varane. It's as simple as that. And I think of all the times that we chatted and all the things that he achieved in his life and all the great moments, everything, I think what he will cherish the most and value the most himself is the image that everybody in football has of him. Whether it's his best friend like Hugo Lloris, whether it's former coaches, former teammates, fans at club that he played or fans at club that he didn't play for. But that's for him, his legacy is that. Bigger than anything that he won, it's why he left behind him, his legacy. And at 31 years old, nobody should retire from football at 31 years old. It's far too young. But he felt like his body could not go anymore. But I think what he would love the most is that people everybody will have a very special memory of him, I think.
Yeah, let's talk memories, Guillaume. I think that's what people want to hear. I mean, I could read you out all of his statistics, but I think we just want to hear some stories.
Let me start with a bad one, and then we go for the good ones, because I remember the game in which he was injured. It was against Espanyol, 2013, and they had to get rid of 72% of the cartilage. Oof. And from then on, he had to change the way he run. Not just that, Hugo Lloris has spoken this week, I think, in L'Equipe, talking about he actually had to prepare himself like an hour and a half before anybody else arrived to training, and then after as well, just to make sure that he was ready for one game per week, which is more or less what he was able to play at the highest level. So that is something that will be interesting to hear from him. The amount of effort that you know, when people throw insults at players, keep forgetting that there's a professional life out there that was destroyed by a pure accident. But in terms of good stuff, I mean, it started as a at Real Madrid, of course, as a replacement to or substitute to Sergio Ramos, Pepe, Albiol, Carvalho, top players, and ended up being, if he's not the best, one of the best of that lot. And I think is it the only one that to win the Champions League and the World Cup in the same year? One of six or seven players in history. Yeah, so stats also prove that was that 2018 that he's he's special.
Christoph, you think Raphael Varane? What comes to mind?
Well, recent memories. I remember the FA Cup final recently where he played. Yeah, it's the last time he played 90 minutes, bowed out with the trophy, played a very, very good game. So that's the one that sticks with me. The player goes out with a trophy, basically not going to talk about World Cup 2018 anymore because that's Jules will bring up other things, I think. But as a Belgian, we forget that game against France in the semi-final where they were very well organised. Anyway,
the game you lost 1-0 against us. Yeah. Sorry, I didn't know what game you were referring to.
Okay, that one. No, but yeah, the last game of him stays with me. That's the one I watched. That's the one that where he played a perfect game, and then you think he goes to Italy, gets another few years in the game, and then he injures himself again. And that's it's a shame. It came as a surprise for me, but if you look at this injury past, you can understand why players retire. We have had some recently too that bowed out at early age of 30. Maybe that's also what we've been discussing before: congestion with the top players.
It's a lesson to all of us. You have to leave when you're at the top, and just before they kick you out. Just remember that.
And with that, Guillaume, thank you so much for doing this show for the last 5 years.
It was great.
Oh, is that the news? Yes.
No, it's not. Categorically, is not. I've seen just reading some quotes about Raphael Varane. Jeffrey can dog be a career and a track record worthy of the player and the person you are. Congratulations for everything and all the best for the future, my soldier. This also got us thinking, Jules, about centre-back partnerships, because you and I had a big discussion about this last Sunday around Saliba and Gabriel, because we were at the Etihad ahead of Manchester City against Arsenal. Well, obviously, we were very much focusing on Premier League-era centre-back partnerships. But when you think of that partnership between Sergio Ramos and Raphael Varane, the number surprised me. 228 matches together in a team that won absolutely everything 4 out of 5 years? 3 out of 4? Three out of 4 years.
It's just a perfect partnership, and I think the way they complemented each other, and to some extent we had a little bit of the same just for that 18 World Cup between Umtiti and Varane, where just the understanding is so spot on. The way Varane could see the game and read the game, and Ramos' physicality and personality and that kind of leadership too that Rafa had, but in a different way. Almost. They were just made to play with each other, although nothing really kind of attracted them to each other. If you look at Ramos and Varane, they're just very, very different people and very different personalities as well. But yeah, on a football pitch, they were just perfect with each other and together. And one had very, very different skill set to the other, and just the two together was just perfect. And I think this will forever stay one of the greatest partnership in Champions League history, for sure, for example, but even in European football.
I think, Christoph, this is one of my favourites about Raphael Varane. I don't know if this is true or not, and you're all experts, so I'll be disappointed if someone has to shoot it down. But there's the story, Christoph, that when he was about to sign for Real Madrid, Zidane called him and he had to tell him, "You got to call me back. I can't think about this right now. I'm studying for the baccalaureate." And if that is true, then I'm absolutely here for it.
Of course it's true.
Well, you have a few of them. I remember that Alex Ferguson called Vincent Kompany's dad and he said, I want him now to Manchester United. And his dad said, he's not coming. He still has to finish his school. So it happens with young guys when school is still important. So if Raphael Varane did that, that's absolutely, if you say no to Zinedine Zidane, that's fabulous, basically.
True story,
nobody was... No, let's say yes.
Let's say
no,
yes.
No, definitely a true story. But sorry, Guillaume, before you go, one of the reasons why Varane had the career that he had, and we talked about his intelligence and the football IQ was great, but his normal IQ was great as well, is because his parents were very strict with school. As a genius that he was as a kid, because he was really better than anybody else in all his age group at youth level, and starting playing in the French top flight with Lens when he was 17 and was like already one of the best in the league. They were very, like, you have to finish school, you have to go and do your baccalaureate, so your A-levels here in England, you know, and it was not negotiable. If he didn't do well at school, he would not go to training, he would not go to play the game, even with the Lens first team. So football and school were great, but school was always, for the Varane family and mum and dad, the most important thing out of the two.
And then we mentioned Zidane. He was the one recommending him. And when he arrived, what was it, 18? Nobody would have said, this is the guy that's going to win. But did he win 4 Champions League and 3 leagues and then a World Cup and et cetera? Nobody. And it was because perhaps that was a time where the profile of the centre-backs were changing. And he was one of the first representatives of somebody who was comfortable playing the ball from the back, but simple in a simple way as well. Physically wasn't the strongest, but he anticipated, he was intelligent. And he obviously convinced everyone that he's a legend. Mm.
In more ways than one, all of this has been the perfect setup to talking about Vincent Kompany and Bayern Munich facing Bayer Leverkusen, the champions in the Bundesliga this weekend. Come on then, Christoph. We know he's had a great start. 6 games, 6 wins, 29 goals scored, 9 of them against Dinamo Zagreb in the Champions League. This is obviously the biggest test thus far.
Well, it's the one everybody's waiting for. I think I was reading Kicker, the German magazine, yesterday, and Bayern Munich always have lots of people applying for tickets, like for a usual top game, 200,000 people that want to go to a game. And now it's like almost 400,000. So everybody in Germany wants to see that game. I see around the world too. There's some magic about that game also, because you have two players, a bit of disciples of Pep Guardiola too. So two attacking-minded managers, young, attractive managers, basically. So, but now we're going to see how strong Bayern is, because they play very risky football. And against a good side like Bayer Leverkusen, that might give you troubles.
What have you made of his start, Guillaume?
Bayer Leverkusen or Kompany? Kompany.
Kompany, sorry.
Both.
Yeah.
Kompany. Surprising. Knowing that Bayern Munich had spoken to many of the managers before he actually going to him. As we know, Ralf Rangnick was completely done, and he decided to say no to it in what he was perhaps a breach to then convince a year later Xabi Alonso. So it's funny how football goes, doesn't it? You have a plan, a very clear plan in which you put everything, all the eggs in one basket, and then Vincent Kompany comes in and proves that there was quality in the side, that you had to do different things that previous managers have done, Tuchel in particular, to get the best out of that side. I don't think it has particularly to do with new players, but it has to do with the use of the players that he had. That, I guess, Christoph, is one of the qualities that you have to say to about Vincent, that not only he's got a very clear idea what he wants to do on the pitch, but relationship with players as well.
Oh, Christoph's lips are moving, and I can only assume that what he's saying is pure gold. But can I hear it? No, I can't. I'll tell you what we'll do. We'll hear from Vincent Kompany. Well, Christoph, you can stop moving your lips. We can't hear you. We'll fix Christoph's line. And in the meantime, we're going to hear from Kompany. It's a really, really interesting clip. He's been asked this question a lot, and he was asked it again the other day, about the fact that he wasn't the first choice to get the Bayern Munich job. Here he is.
I'm born in Brussels, yeah? Northern Quarter in Brussels. My dad was a refugee, came from Congo to Belgium. What were my chances of ever setting a foot, even in the Premier League, playing in the Premier League, winning something as a player, playing for the national team, and so on? If you take the odds and the chances that it was for me to happen, 0.001%, you know? And now I'm a coach. The question is, do you just stop believing? Do you stop believing in yourself because of what other people say? Do you stop believing in what you can achieve because, you know what, there's a very small chance. The mentality is to continue to go. And in the end, if you fail, you fail. If you succeed, you succeed, but you become better every single time. That's so important. And the question is irrelevant in terms of the direction of the fact that, because online you can always find stuff, so I really don't take it any personal, never. But the point is, it's an interesting topic in terms of what is it that people are supposed to do? Give up? Stop because of what others think? And in the world we live in, I think no, just let's encourage people to succeed, to break barriers, to do something.
That's Vincent Kompany. We'll come back to that because there's been another goal at Tottenham in the Europa League. So, Hale.
Tottenham have doubled their lead, Steve. So it's Tottenham 2, Karabag nil. The goal coming after 52 minutes from a corner from this near side, the right. Kulusevski whipped it in, header off a Karabag defender, and it fell to Pape Sarr at the far post, and he flicked it home. So 10-man Tottenham lead Karabag by 2-0.
All right, we haven't quite got Christoph back yet, Guillaume, but we will do very shortly. You enjoyed that, listening to Vincent Kompany? I think you just did a round of applause, in fact.
I did. It deserves it. It's people like him makes us think what success is and reminds us all the time that that social media is something that has blocked many people's projection in life and makes them smaller. But you should just go for it. If you think there's enough passion, if there is enough talent, or you got enough time for it, you have to go for it, no matter what people think. It was a wonderful, wonderful reminder of what sports is. And at sports, it's not just about the winner. There are many winners. And by him going to Bayern Munich, for instance, and not saying, you know what, I'm not going to go to Bayern Munich. What's going to happen to me? Look at my career in the past. No, he just looked forward and thought, okay, I'm just going to give it a go. I find that brilliant. Yeah.
It's very rousing, Jules, wasn't it?
Yeah, I love how much he believes in himself, and I think he's such an example and such a great role model. He's always been, for the people who've met him, he's always been like that anyway. I think he's always been so charismatic, so driven too, and so that self-belief, I think, is very, very important. And he's right. He might not succeed at Bayern. He might succeed, but at least he will give it a good go. And we always knew that he had a very specific style of football. We saw at Burnley in the Championship. The problem was the Premier League was too strong for the players he had at Burnley to reproduce what they were doing the level below. But if you give him better players than the ones...
Jules, you mentioned a really good point in a learning process for him, a learning lesson for him. You're absolutely right. He goes to put players of Burnley in the Premier League and doesn't work. And he learned the lesson of not to be loyal to his players. You have to be ruthless when you actually are aiming for the top. Sorry, Jules.
Yeah, no, but you're right. But I think if you give him better players than the one he had at Burnley, for example, no offense to them, but his philosophy and his style of football should be easier to implement than if you have Kimmich and Olise and Kane and Gnabry and Musiala in his team compared to the players that he had last season in the Premier League. So I was very, very excited to see how well he would do or not. And I just think he's delivered so far. And regardless of what happens at the weekend in this massive game against Xabi Alonso and Bayer Leverkusen, is still on the right path. Where they end up at the end of the season, I don't know. Can they win the Champions League? I think they have enough talent in their squad to do so, but is he ready for that? We'll see. The league will be very competitive this season, certainly between them and Bayer Leverkusen. So we will see as well. But I just love the journey that he started and how he started it.
Penalty at Tottenham, Sahail.
No worries.
Come in, Sahail.
Tottenham 2, Karabag 0. Karabag have just missed from the penalty spot. Tural Bamromov, left-footed, way over the top. And Vicario's just saved from Juninho as well. It's going all off here at the Tottenham Hotspur Stadium. Tottenham down to 10 men, but they lead Karabag by 2-0.
Thank you, Sahail. Sahail Sahi there at Tottenham Hotspur against Karabag. We'll keep you up to date with that, albeit we're going off air and Johnny Iansen will be taking over in 7 minutes. Remember, as I told you a little bit earlier, Prime Minister Sir Keir Starmer is speaking at 10:30 at the United Nations in New York City. We'll be bringing you that live on 5 Live. Another few minutes of Julien Laurent, Guillaume Balaguer and Christophe Terreur, I think.
He's back.
Hey. We've got some bad news for you, though, Christophe. Bad news for you. In what we're now calling the Luis Enrique rule, you missed 2% of the programme, so we will have to take that out of your fee.
Okay.
Really sorry about that.
2% I can live without.
Really sorry.
I think so. No worries.
Give us a bit.
Yeah, I didn't even hear what was said. I only saw Guillaume applauding, so I knew that he liked to go to Vincent Company.
Well, yeah, so, we heard.
That was basically it.
We heard so what I company
knew that
said.
Fragment, so,
yeah, anyway. and it, you know, it was really, really good answer. And Guillaume made a really good point about the way we view success. And also, I mean, Christophe, you know him better than any of us. Like, why should he care that he wasn't the first choice for the job? It meant he got the job. Therefore, it's a good thing for Vincent Kompany.
Well, and Vincent Kompany always loves challenges, basically. He wants to prove people wrong since, basically he started his career. So he likes the big challenges. And Bayern Munich was immediately something that he was keen on when they called him. I'm surprised by the way they are playing do in a way and basically the results. I didn't think it would go that quickly, but you have to see them against the bigger teams to see the bigger picture. But he's always had those ideas. He tried to play the football with Anderlecht in the Belgian League too, and there he didn't have the players to execute it either. That was a bit like Burnley last season, where they made a lot of individual mistakes because they weren't able to bring the football that he has in his mind. And now, with Bayern Munich, he has the almost perfect squad, I think, to execute his ideas, and that might bring him far.
Just for those of you who haven't necessarily been following the start of the Bundesliga season, Bayer Leverkusen have already done what they didn't do in the entirety of last season, which is lost a game at the back end of August. They lost at home 3-2 to RB Leipzig. Since then, though, they've conceded 9 goals in total in their first 4 league games. Little trivia question for you guys. Which Bayer Leverkusen player do you think said this? We need to be honest with each other. This is not enough. It cannot be we concede 3 goals every game, especially in this way. We like to call ourselves a top team. A top team does not concede 3 goals in 45 minutes. Said who?
Granit Xhaka.
Obviously, yeah. Granit Xhaka, Jules. Obviously.
Obviously. And he's right. He's absolutely right. And if you concede 3 in 45 minutes against Bayern, you're not coming back on Saturday. So defensively, in terms of the balance of the team, it's been difficult for them, let's say. But last season they were conceding goals, but they were not in this way, not certainly against Leipzig, for example, where they were very poor defensively, I thought, in transition, defensive transitions. So we see Xabi Alonso try to change a few players, for example, for the last game, which didn't go down well because they didn't play well in that first half, and he had to bring on the big boys to get a last-minute winner from Boniface, which is a bit their trademark. They did it a lot last season late in games, and they did it again at the weekend against Wolfsburg, but again, that was not enough. So as much as this is a big test for Kompany and Bayern and his Bayern team, this is also a big test for the champions and for Xabi Alonso to almost kind of re-establish themselves this season as we're the holders, we're the best team here, and the others are there to catch us.
What's interesting, I feel, talking to some of the people that were with him, is that it's not the consequence of these goals conceded, not the consequence of having worse players, but the little associations that get created between the three centre-backs when you have a new centre-back in General Bosian, or the work that the centre midfielders have to do defensively, where you run and how intensive you are, and you've got Alex Garcia added to that midfield. Those little associations, those little jobs, their obligations and responsibilities have not been at the level that they were, especially at the back end of last season. But he feels he's got a better squad, and the target of challenging for the title should be not achievable, but certainly one that they could be part of in the battle for it. Because the points that they got last season, I mean, it's crazy. I think only Pep Guardiola's Bayern Munich got more points than them winning the title. That's not by chance. So they don't think that that they've taken steps back. All of a sudden they've relaxed, or all of a sudden everybody feels they've got the peak of their careers. It's not like that at all. And Xabi Alonso is working on those little jobs that have to be done, and those little associations between the new players and the players that were already there to get Bayer Leverkusen to that level that they had.
And to finish, Christoph, the late goal thing is amazing. I mean, that Boniface goal, that was 93rd minute. As Jules said, they did it so often last season. And at some point, you think, oh, well, they can't keep doing this. They categorically can and will and have keep doing it.
So Bayern Munich, Vincent Kompany already knows that they will concede a late goal. So minute 49. And Boniface will do something crazy, obviously, in his celebration, like pulling his pants down or doing something.
Maybe not that. Let's not. That's I think let's probably leave that as a celebration. I think maybe you are using the US version of pants.
At least
I hope so, Christoph.
That's the one.
There we go.
It's short.
That's the one. Don't speak French as well as I used to, but obviously I've got a little bit of that Flemish going on. Right. Thank you, guys. Jules, Christoph, Guillaume, thank you all very much.
Thank you, guys.
All right.
Julien Laurent, Christoph Terreur and Guillaume Balaguer with us on the EuroLeagues. You'll be able to listen to this as a podcast on BBC Sounds if you haven't already. It's 10 seconds to 10 o'clock, Johnny Iansen. That is your gift.
You're too generous.
I gift you now 4 seconds. Don't waste it, will you?
I will use every moment of it. Thank you so much, Steve. Yes, hello, it's Johnny in for Gordon. Coming up on the programme, we'll cross live to the United Nations where Keir Starmer is speaking. We'll get analysis of that and, of course, the latest from Lebanon. Right now, let's get the news at 10 o'clock. That comes from Laura Harms.
The voice of the UK.
And the home of the Premier League.
This is BBC Radio 5 Live.
The Met Police says it'll look into whether anyone else committed criminal offences in relation to her sexual abuse allegations against Mohamed Al-Fayed. Scotland Yard has also revealed there were 19 historical allegations that resulted in crimes being recorded involving Al-Fayed. They're alleged to have taken place between 1979 and 2013. Detectives have insisted that any victims will be supported in the best way possible. Dal Babu is a former Met chief superintendent.
They're beginning to realise how much damage this is happening on their watch now, albeit that these are historic matters. So the police will want to ensure that they are on top of this investigation and that they will deal with any individuals who may be alive, who may have been implicated in Al-Fayed's offending behaviour.
Israel's Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu has told his country's military to keep fighting with full force in Lebanon. He's not responded to an international call for a 21-day ceasefire in fighting between Israel and Hezbollah. The Prime Minister will meet former President Donald Trump in the coming hours in New York. It will be the first time that Sir Keir Starmer has met the Republican presidential candidate. Our political editor Chris Mason has more.
The Prime Minister will head for Trump Tower shortly. He told us this evening that it was good to have the opportunity for talks with Donald Trump. "I'm a great believer in personal relations on the international stage," Sir Keir Starmer said, adding, "I think it really matters that you know who your counterpart is in any given country and know them personally, get to know them face to face." He is not meeting Mr. Trump's rival from the Democrats, the Vice President Kamala Harris, who is in Washington today. Sir Keir said he would like to speak to her, but there were the usual diary challenges.